Friday, July 8th, with the decision definitely made to stay at the ranch until Monday, I sink happily into the lotus eater stage. I do not work, and perversely, I miss it. I rode with Lyndon in the morning over the Reagan Ranch. He never tires of looking at the deer. And then back to the house for the important event of the day for me. Driving in with Lucy and Pat, Pat at the wheel. See the dream house Lucy had described me. They'd found it the day before, and they were so excited because I wanted to go with them to see it. I couldn't have given them a better present. Lucy described it every mile of the way, with music in her voice. Mother, when I was a little girl, 6 years old, going around in your high-heeled shoes, and dreaming of the house I'd someday live in with my husband, this is the house. I'll be so happy when I'm on my honeymoon to think I've got it to come back to and start out in. The location sounded good, right off exposition, close to O. Henry. When we arrived, I found it was on a little horseshoe, a little nest of some 6 or 8 houses, rather delightfully composed on a hillside. Her dream house, a little duplex, made of old brick, a rather mellow pinkish beige, with a little wrought iron gate, all of it Tom Thumb scale, and an absolute miniature few feet of grass and shrubs framing the house. Inside, it was in delightful taste. I found myself taking off my hat to Lucy, agreeing with her enthusiasm. I wished we'd brought a tape measure so we could see the size of the rooms and the wall space. Lucy at once dispatched Pat to the closest drugstore to buy one. He was back in 15 minutes, so convenient is Austin. And we got down on the floor, crawling along on our hands and knees, Pat and I, measuring the living room, nice size, 19 feet by 12, and the master bedroom, almost 12 by 14.8. But alas, I fear that king-size bed of theirs will have to wait for the next house. And the other very tiny bedroom or den, a bit bigger than 9 by 11. The kitchen was bright and shiny with copper, and Lucy kept on pulling out drawers and saying, "See, Mother, see, Mother," and opening closet doors and saying, "Look at this wonderful storage space." Only living in it will teach her how small it is compared to what she's living in now. And in Austin of the lovely views, I begrudge the lack of a view of any sort, but it is an absolutely charming little place otherwise. A good laboratory to learn to keep house in. And I at once began to think about the things I could lend her that we could have put in while she was on her honeymoon. Then, excited and tired, we drove over to Youngblood's, and I ordered a fried chicken dinner, Lucy's very favorite. But it was Friday, and she remembered, and so she had fried shrimp, she and Pat, while she glowed with the enthusiasm that I had shared with them their first real examination of the place that they might live in. All in all, I applaud their discernment and envy their excitement. And as I sat at Youngblood's, enjoying the fried chicken and hot rolls and honey, I thought what a far cry this is from the elegance of the White House. But how content, how delighted I am here. Will the final move be as easy? I want to enjoy, relish every day there to the fullest, and begrudge not one thing when I depart. I believe I can. I left them to go their visiting ways with all Lucy's multitude of friends, and return to the main ranch, find the Jack Horners, the Bob Youngs, and the Guilds visiting Lyndon, established in the Cedar House, and Sarge Shriver, expected to fly in about 5 o'clock, bringing with him Dr. Bill Crook and his assistants Bill Mullins and Paul Duncan. They'd been having a tour of all the poverty projects in Texas. Dallas, Houston, Corpus Christi, Camp Gary, San Marcos. When they arrived, Lyndon loaded in Sarge and some of the newspaper men, and I followed in another car with Bill Mullins and Paul Duncan and the ladies, and we drove through the Reagan Ranch and on to the Scharnhorst, where a chopper picked us up, and we flew to the West Ranch in time to arrive just before sundown and see Dale Meeks' operation of trapping the native deer. He had a huge net, 30 or more feet across, rigged on a high pole in the middle, and stretching out to trees or retaining poles on the side. Around the base of the middle pole, he put corn. And then one of the Smith boys, who's in charge of the operation, and absolutely delighted with the job, climbs in a nearby tree, the string that triggers the net, and when a suitable number of deer, hopefully as many as 5, are eating the corn, drops the net over them. He parked out of sight and waited. Then we got the signal, The net had been dropped, drove quickly up over the hill. There, lying on the ground, under the net, were five struggling deer. And tumbling out of the pickup were Dale Meeks and several Sultemeyer boys and others, five in all, one to catch each of the deer and carefully, tenderly disentangle him from the net and pick him up. Some of them were bleeding just like sheep. This town astonished me. A man can carry a moderate-sized one, sometimes with a big buck with horns. They're in velvet now. It takes two. They'd rigged up a pickup that had the sides enclosed with just tiny holes for air, so that it was quite dark inside. Dale said that amazingly, some of his catches of deer would be asleep by the time he drove them to the Reagan Ranch, and he'd have to go in and wake them up to get them out. On the first catch, they had made the mistake of leaving some open space so that light came in. And the deer had been absolutely frantic, had kicked, fought, struggled, injured themselves. It was an interesting operation and an absolutely new field to all the people participating in it. On the second catch, they caught only one deer, but that was six for a night. We are hoping to populate the Reagan and the Dance, and Wesley, with a heavy overpopulation on his ranch, is willing to give us as many as we can catch. As for the ranch hands, this is more fun than a Saturday night dance. They were reveling in it. We went back by chopper to the main house when dark had fallen and had dinner and then watched the movie of the Big Bend Country and the Night of the Dragon and the President's Country, which I feared was about 30 minutes too much for our company. I'd had Sarge on my right at dinner, listening eagerly to his very graphic stories of individual successes in the poverty program. He's a great salesman, and apparently Camp Gary is a showcase, with every graduate from the Job Corps going on to a good-paying job in private enterprise. Lennon insisted that they spend the night. They worked out a plan for a plane to pick them up the next morning, and I showed Sarge and Bill Crook and the other guests to their rooms.